It's Cofield and Company, live at the Thomas and Mack.
Nobody watches football games because of the announcers.
You can't do that. No, you can't do it.
Dude, you want to step outside? You want to step outside?
It's time for Cofield and Company with Steve Cofield on ESPN Las Vegas.
Oh, the wit of one Ari running the show here on Cofield and Company is Adam Hill is here for a little bit this afternoon as we're at the Thomas and Mack. It's Cofield. Ari's back in our Finley Toyota studios. Yes, that was the voice of my favorite little guy, the Bagel Boss. Apparently today is National Bagel Day.
Really?
Yeah. Which I'm kind of disappointed.
Kind of got lost. Kind of got lost in the other news.
I did get kind of lost. Ari, you can pop on here. You're one of the chosen people. Where do you get your bagels? In Vegas. Because I think a lot of people out there are like, National Bagel Day, where do we go?
That's tough. I'm from an area where the bagels are king.
You're from the bagel heartland.
Northeastern PA, yes. So sure. I haven't found anything great out here. Bagel Cafe, I think it's called.
Bagel Cafe is
pretty
solid.
Yes. And, you know, I guess.
And there's a New York bagel on Rancho. That's very good.
Yeah. I mean, Einstein's not bad.
Oh, boy.
Adam, you had a look when Ari was like, I'm from the cradle of the bagel.
Yeah, Northeastern PA.
I didn't say it's the area, but we definitely have much better bagels out there.
Yeah, New York bagels, overrated. Northeastern PA, that's where it's at.
That's right.
I haven't gotten through all of The Office yet. Is there a bagel episode in Scranton?
No, I don't remember.
My favorite place in Scranton, Pennsylvania, Abe's Deli, they actually have a menu on their fridge in the office for... It's on there for several episodes. Eventually, they change it. But that's like a real place in Scranton.
Nice.
I actually heard discussion of that on my favorite new podcast, The Office Ladies. Steve's going to have to get into that one soon, too.
Well, I can't get into it too soon. I have to finish all the seasons first.
No, you don't. They go episode by episode.
Oh, they do?
Yeah. They're rewatching the entire thing, episode by episode.
I don't know if I can get any more psycho over that show than I am right now.
It's so good.
It's pretty ridiculous. So, I never expected this. Never expected this today. Wow, I'm blown away. Can you believe that the Raiders sold out every PSL in that stadium?
I thought you were going to go, can you believe Bishop Gorman moved on from Kenny Sanchez?
No, that's coming up later on. That's coming up later on.
I knew you weren't going with the actual big news of the day.
I tried to throw you off a little bit, but my tell was too easy.
Yeah,
they've sold, I'm thinking, over 58,000, even though the stadium holds 65,000. 6,000-7,000 are for suites. They've sold 58,000 PSLs. They're all gone. Between $500 and $75,000, the entire stadium is sold out.
Not bad for a building with no roof.
With PSLs, yeah. And today's so crazy. I mean, I wanted to do a bunch of stuff on the stadium today and the question marks, and especially with UNLV, also with the Raiders. This PSL story should be talked about a lot. Like, what did you buy tickets for? Are you expecting action in, late August? Are you going to get it in early September? Will there not be events there at all in 2020? But clearly the big news this morning is Gerard Gallant. Let me get it right. On the day that he's fired, let's at least show the man the respect of getting his name correct. Gerard Gallant fired. We have a lot to get into. The Golden Knights have had a magical run over the first 2 years. This year has been a little up and down. This guy is gone now. Did you expect to wake up today with any possibility of Gallant being sent packing?
No.
Nothing?
Flat out, no.
Okay.
Definitely not.
See, I thought you were going to come in and say, hey, there had been some rumblings behind the scenes. You had told me in the past, maybe there some heads were budding.
I thought they were very close last year to firing him.
Which is pretty amazing.
Yeah. I think last year they were very close. And we talked about it a little bit on the show. I talked to you more off the air. I thought there was a real disconnect between Gallant and the front office. So I thought there was real issues there. But it seemed to have kind of gone away a little bit. Some changing of the power structure with McCrimmon moving up, McPhee kind of moving away from day-to-day operations. And I thought maybe that could help soothe. I thought that was part of the reason why that happened. Apparently not. But I thought part of the reason why they kind of made that switch, not only to not lose McCrimmon, but I thought there was real issues between McPhee and Gallant. But
so you thought GMGM and Gallant weren't getting along, so let's put a buffer in between with McCrimmon.
Yeah, and I think part, I mean, obviously the bigger issue is they didn't want to lose McCrimmon. He would have gone somewhere else. He could have had a GM job. But I think that was part of hey, the calculation was maybe that soothes those issues a little bit. Apparently that wasn't the case, and the underperforming is what they're saying is the company line of what happened is not living up to expectations, and I think it's fairly accurate. I don't think there's some big explosive development that's going to come out of this. We've seen some coaches fired in the NHL recently, and some things came out about what was going on behind the scenes and how they were treating people and treating players and that sort of thing. I don't think that's the case. It's not living up to what they think this team can be, and part of that is being a victim of expectations by what you created with having the first season.
Let's listen to Kelly McCrimmon this morning as he makes the shocking announcement.
The Golden Knights organization announced this morning that we relieved head coach Gerard Gallant and assistant coach Mike Kelly from their coaching duties with our team. We would like to thank both men for their contributions during their time here. Together, we shared some real special moments over the course of their time as coaches.
Shared some amazing moments, like record-setting, unbelievable moments for an expansion team to go to a league championship final and fall short. And now, less than 2 years later, the guy who led them there is fired. Here's McCrimmon with more explanation on why the change is being made.
With respect to what was behind the decision, as a manager, sometimes you have a feeling that something isn't the way you need it to be or want it to be. We feel we've underperformed a little bit, and certainly that's not to pile out at the feet of Mike and Gerard, but sometimes you feel a change is needed. So that was what went into the decision. Like anything we do, we try to do what we genuinely believe is in the best interests of the Golden Knights organization, and that's what we've done in this case.
Kelly McCrimmon, GM.
GMKM.
Gerard Gallant fired today. Fans are pissed.
They really are.
Is that a suitable explanation that we are doing the best thing for the organization and we had a feel?
I mean, sure. You're in charge, and you're the one's going to do it. And by the way, I think this also puts the onus on Kelly McCrimmon and George McPhee in the brain trust of the Golden Knights. They're putting it out there saying, hey, we think that a coaching change is going to get the most out of the team that we could possibly get. And if they don't, then they're looked at next. So this is a bold move by them. This is one bullet that they have that, you look around and say, well, how many changes can they really make? They don't have much flexibility with the salary cap. One big change they can make to kind of change things up is with the coach. But if you do that, now they look at you. And if this doesn't work out, this is this big move that will fall back on your shoulders. I just think there's a ton to this and why Gerard Gallant kind of worked in the beginning and why maybe it's not working now. But I also think you could look at it and say they are at 5-on-5 expected goals, and you're looking at advanced metrics and stats that I know a lot of traditionalists don't really love, but 5-on-5 expected goals, they are the best team in the league, and they have not scored. And their goaltenders have been horrific, and that's Fleury and Subban this year. Subban has been better in the most recent stretch till the last game, but his numbers for the season are really bad. Fleury's numbers are really bad in terms of expected goals allowed. So you've got the goaltenders kind of letting you down. You've got some bad puck luck in terms of not finishing chances that you've had, among the worst in scoring percentage and just the amount of expected goals compared to what they've actually scored. Those things would tell you that the coaching actually was working. They were getting chances. They were getting in position to score. They just weren't finishing those opportunities. How much does bringing in a new coach change that? We'll find out. I think they're totally different styles, but there's a lot to unpack here.
So if you're just tuning into Cofield and Company, Gerard Gallant fired. Fired. They've lost 4 games in a row. The season has been a bit underwhelming. It's not like they're 15 games below 500. They've had a decent season, but expectations are high. They fired the coach today. Going back to the beginning of this whole thing, who was Gallant's guy? Was it Foley? Was it McPhee? Was the two of them together? I just wonder what came apart the last few days, and if it's Foley's guy. I mean, that's quite the hurdle to cross if you're management, where you go to the boss and he's the guy who was behind Gallant, and you're like, this is it. We got to move on, Bill.
Yeah, I think that is interesting. Like I said, we don't know the exact details of relationships behind the scenes. We've just heard the rumblings that McPhee and Gallant never got along. McCrimmon seemed to be a little bit better with. I'm not sure on that. Clearly, from today's decision, it looks like maybe that wasn't the case. I don't know if they brought him in just because of his resume and how good he is as a coach, and then kind of learned, hey, maybe this isn't working on a day-to-day basis relationship-wise. But I know his guy, when you say who's his guy, his guy's Jonathan Marchessault, which makes the locker room very interesting. I know that there's been times that they've talked about trading him.
Gallant's guy is Marchessault, because yeah. you had told me during the offseason, and we talked about it on the air, that Marchessault could be going, but that Gallant was, you know, so behind him that just did not happen. So
they've had a lot
maybe
of calls.
That changes now.
They've had a lot of calls about Jonathan Marchessault over the last couple of years.
Okay.
And every single time, Gerard Gallant said, absolutely not. It's not happening. So that becomes interesting. It's his guy. He's still in the locker room. Does he move on at some point? Do they get rid of him? Or is there still, like, lingering, hey, is there an issue in the locker room of saying, hey, you just got rid of the guy that I'm so close with. Now where does he fit in the locker room?
More from Kelly McCrimmon on the way back. We're also going to hear about the new choice, which this story is crazy to begin with, that Gerard Gallant is out after making the Stanley Cup in year one with an expansion team. He's not given a chance to win and, you know, coach all the way through year three. His replacement is from the enemy Sharks. He was fired about a month ago. Now Pete DeBoer is in place.
The Three is brought to you by Dustin DeHart at Nova Home Loans. Call today at 577-2600 to receive a $500 coupon towards your appraisal or any purchase or refinance. Dial up Dustin now. 577-2600.
And cleared out of the zone by Lazar. It's toward the empty net. Will it have enough? Yes! Empty net goal for Buffalo.
Now, back to Cofield and Company, live at the Thomas and Mack.
UNLV game coming up tonight at 8 o'clock. We're here until 7:30. It's Cofield and Company. Adam Hill pitching in for a little bit in this first hour. We planned on spending much of the first hour talking about the highly publicized primetime press conference over at the Palms with Conor McGregor, but that thunder was stolen just a bit by the Golden Knights this morning. Shocking. Gerard Gallant out, and Peter DeBoer in. You know, I was just thinking, if you had faded the Knights betting-wise, you know, the last couple of weeks, you made a boatload of money. If next coach fired in the NHL, odds were up on the board. I don't know that Gallant would have been way up there. And this combination of Gallant going bye-bye and the recently fired DeBoer from the enemy Sharks coming in is just mind-blowing. Give us one more. Actually, I think we have a couple more. Give me Kellen McCrimmon again, explaining why the change was made. We're efforting.
We'll get it.
We're also going to hear about Pete DeBoer. We're also going to get to fan reaction, which has been strong. And the fans are shocked.
Yeah.
And there's an emotional tie with this team and with Gallant. So for them, this is, I don't know if heartbreaking is the right word. Well, right now it's anger-inducing. McCrimmon.
No, it wasn't you know, a specific block of games or a specific game. It's hard to put into words, I guess, unless you've done these jobs, but it's more just, you know, just the feeling that you have that a change might be needed. And, you know, I wish I could be more specific than that, but that's really how we felt. Thought about this a lot. Certainly wasn't something that we did in haste or something that we did based on, as you touched on, the recent four games. It was a decision that was arrived at over time.
Okay. So they've been thinking about this for a while. Do you think they were discussing this, contemplating it, even before the four-game losing streak? Had they seen disturbing signs even before the homestand?
I think possibly. Again, this is not.
You said this goes back to last year where you thought that, hey, there was a point last year where they may say, you know what, time to hit the bricks, Gerard.
I told you at a time about mid last year that I thought it was a very possible thing, and I thought part of it was guys that were available. I thought there was coaches available last year, including Quenneville, who I thought was a huge possibility that when he was fired, they might make the switch and bring him in. And I do think one of the things they wanted was to make sure they had the replacement in place. And I think it just kind of lined up. DeBoer's available. He's got a very proven track record, especially in his first year in new places. for immediate improvement. And the fact that he was available certainly probably, you know, kicked this into higher gear. I think that they were definitely looking for a time to do it, is my thought. And right now, see, like, losing the four in a row, the horrible starts that they've had, having seven more games to go on this road trip, that includes, you know, the All-Star game and that bye week, so it's basically a month-long road trip, a chance to bond with the players on the road, because that's where a lot of the bonding is done in professional sports, when you're on the road, because you're not home around your families, you're kind of together, so that gives them some time to do that. And I think it's a good time in terms of, you're on the road for three more games. I don't think he's going to come in and make some drastic change, but you're on the road for three more games. You can kind of figure out the team a little bit, see what you have, see what kind of relationships, you know, start to form, and then have those three games, and then have 10 days off with the All-Star game and the bye week to really assess everything, and then try to put your stamp on things going forward from that. So I think it works out logistically from that standpoint for the team, to be away from home and not really have to answer that many questions about it for a while, although I know Dave Shane was the only guy on the road trip. I know one of the other writers had skipped the Buffalo trip to be in Ottawa for a Mark Stone story.
Oof.
Because remember, so that worked out well for him because he was the only one that ended up being there this morning. And then I saw there was one flight direct, I think, from Vegas to Ottawa today, and a bunch of media people I saw had been tweeting from being there on that trip. So they were all on the plane together going up there. So a lot of people are going to be there. But it gives them – they're away from here. They're away from, you know, Vegas, where there's a lot more focus on, a lot more attention. You can be away, kind of be overshadowed a little bit with the Mark Stone stuff tomorrow. Mark Stone being back in Ottawa is going to draw a lot of the attention from the Ottawa media. So it works out logistically in a lot of different ways for the Golden Knights. But certainly a surprise that it happened now. I saw a lot of – fans kind of outraged the other day when Gerard Gallant said getting them off to a better start wasn't his job. So a lot of people reacted to that and said, well, maybe you need to find a new job. But I think that was just a lot of emotional reaction more than actual, you know, prediction.
A little more Kelly McCrimmon, GM, talking about what the future holds and the change of Gallant to DeBoer.
This is all in the last 24 hours that any of this has gone on, so it came together very quickly, thus the announcement here today.
So that's in relation to DeBoer. That just developed in the last 24 hours.
Yeah.
Really? Wait, the move wasn't in haste, but after a four straight loss, they were able to put together a DeBoer deal and make the decision on Gallant in 24 hours?
Yeah, in the last 24 hours.
Which technically would be before the four straight loss.
So what would have happened if they won?
Yeah. I mean, my guess is they've been talking to DeBoer for weeks.
I don't think weeks.
At least a week.
I think
four or five days.
I think a few days.
Okay.
I think 24 hours is a ridiculous comment.
Okay.
And I don't.
And you don't think they would they wouldn't reach out to him, like send out feelers a week or so after he got fired from the Sharks, just in case? Or that would you be afraid that it would leak?
I think you'd be afraid, and I think that's part of why they did it right now too. Of like, if you're going to make the decision, you're going to go, just go, because this team is very, very, very secretive about everything that's going on, and you know there really was not. These are the kind of things that usually come out before they happen. There was none of that. This team is just so locked up tight. And I think that's why you kind of believe them a little bit more that it was a late developing thing, because they like to act and get ahead of things. And they also like to make announcements when they're either on the road or super late at night. You know, there's been a couple of contract extensions that happened as soon as all the press was gone from the building.
Why is that?
I don't know. They don't like any. They don't like the attention. They don't like people asking questions at all. It's everything they can do to possibly cover anything up from media and from questions.
They'll get help this fall. Actually, it starts this April with the Raiders coming.
Yeah.
So they'll get their wish.
Exactly. And I'm sure you saw the tweets earlier from some TV people that were kicked out of City National Arena this morning.
I did want to ask you about that. Hold off on that for like 2 minutes. Let's hear from McCrimmon on the other shocker is this is in Pete DeBoer. It's a guy that Gallant was going off on last year during that series, right? Called him a clown. Then you have the not a major, and the Golden Knights just collapse on the power play to freaking get bounced from the playoffs. And now the enemy, I mean, we'll have to come up with a list of, you know, imagine these situations where the enemy coach is now your coach less than a year later. Here's McCrimmon on DeBoer.
We'd also at this time like to welcome Peter DeBoer as the next coach of the hockey club. We're excited with the skill set that he brings to this job, what he can do. For our team.
From what you know, his skill set is different from Gallant's. How?
Gerard Gallant, very much a player coach, and I think that's why it worked out from the beginning. Like he comes into an organization with a bunch of guys that have chips on their shoulders, you know, the whole Golden Misfits thing, and he basically is like, hey, nobody believed in you guys. Nobody wanted you guys. Now you're together. Like, let's go. We're in this together. Let's play. He kind of lets them have, you know, a lot of rope to kind of work with, and hey, this is on you guys. He doesn't like to make a whole lot of changes. He doesn't you know, he talks all the time. He'd rather just have one lineup and roll it out every night and just kind of let them do it. He trusts in the players a lot. He lets the players be the players. He's not a disciplinarian in that way. And I think that worked to get them to a certain level to allow those guys to flourish and make that run that they did. But there is the other side of that at some point, if they're not responding and they're not listening, you know, how do you then, you know, kind of change it up a little bit? How do you give them a spark if that's who you are as a coach, if you're the player's guy? And I think they also went from that group of guys that are trying to prove something, guys with a chip on their shoulder, to a bunch of guys with long-term extensions that are now superstars, that have all this, you know, have all these positive energy around them, and they're not that same group of like fighting for every single opportunity that they get. They're guys that are a little bit more comfortable, and that might not work as a player's coach on the same level. And so I don't think that they were terrible. I mean, we talked about it. The advanced analytics will tell you they should be a lot better than they are. They just had some bad puck luck. Those things tend to even out. So you would expect, you know, a move for the Golden Knights to get better as the season goes on, to get closer to where their numbers say they should be as the best team in the league. But it just wasn't happening. And I think part of what, you know, Kelly McCrimmon is saying there is like the feel of sometimes something needs to be done. I think a lot of that is, hey, let's bring in this disciplinarian guy. This guy known a lot for X's and O's, and to kind of crack down a little bit more on the players than Gallant did. Not to say that Pete DeBoer is not well liked. We know that there's a lot of players that he's played for that love him. Joe Thornton maybe being the best example. Joe Thornton just loves that guy, and so there is, you know, it's just a different style of coaching. And I think that they look at this as, hey, we're going from players coach to disciplinarian guy who's going to kind of put his print on things and maybe get a little bit of a spark out of the team. And that's why I think they go in a complete 180 of style of coach.
Real quick, before we get to what's trending, hold off, Ari, a couple minutes here. So, yeah, there was that weird tweet earlier in the day. One of the deans of sports broadcasters in Vegas on the TV side, Ron Futrell, tweeted out, Golden Knights officials have kicked us out of City National Arena. They said they do not want us to talk to fans. They promised a document to follow. Can't wait to read it. What happened?
Yeah, I mean, this kind of goes along with what we know about the Golden Knights organization in general. My take on it is that what the fans were saying was very negative about the organization. They didn't want that out there. And so in their mind, why allow news media on our property to talk to fans who are trashing us? That's my read on it. That's my take on it. It's not very off-brand for that organization. So it makes a lot of sense to me. I know that we had people en route at the time, and they just turned back.
Good heads up.
Like, okay, I guess we're not going. So, yeah, I mean, that is very much on-brand for this organization. They are so protective of messaging, so protective of what gets out there. And sometimes, you know, maybe that could be a good thing. In this case, I think it looks really bad on them.
ESPN Las Vegas.
Hey, Raiders on three. 1, 2, 3.
Raiders.
Home of the Raiders fan.
So I'm not going to go in there with pom-poms and jump up and down. That's not my job. We prepare them with the video before the games and stuff like that. But
now, back to Cofield and Company. Live at the Thomas and Mack.
Was that a final straw for Gerard Gallant? Yes, the Knights have lost 4 games in a row, but in the middle of this most recent mini losing streak, he also said it's not my job to go in and go extra level on the motivation. So, shocking day. Gerard Gallant, all the hugs and kisses, all the adulation of a magical Stanley Cup run in season one as an expansion team. And now, less than 2 years later, he's been fired. This is nuts. But maybe it's more normal than we think in the world of hockey. Brian Blessing's been covering the sport forever. He's one of the top voices in the market covering the NHL. Brian, did you expect to wake up this morning and see Gerard Gallant has been fired?
I most certainly did not. Okay. I've been saying for a pretty juicy part of the year, something at the end of the year wouldn't have shocked me. I could not get by the Steve Yzerman connection with Gallant, and they're god-awful, and they're choking on Blashill the rest of the way. And I could have envisioned Gallant ultimately going to Detroit with nowhere to go but up. And honestly, I think he's there by the weekend. But it's funny, the clip you just played, I was going to ask Adam, because Adam's at those post-game press conferences. We did a two-hour thing on this today. And, you know, it's funny, Adam, when there was that comment about the pom-poms, but the one when Dave Shane asked him the question and he said, oh, we're going to go negative, it was so out of character. And I'm like, negative? What a joke. Around here, negative? I mean, go to Montreal or Boston or Toronto, you know? But I'm wondering, that was like a couple weeks ago, I wonder if he knew something was going on because he had a bite to him.
Yeah, that's fair. And by the way, that question was actually positive. If you go back and listen to it, it was, you know, are you sending a statement by beating one of these good teams today? I mean, it was a very weird thing. But you're right. It was. He's had those moments before where he's kind of exploded.
Usually they're calculated.
Yeah, possibly. And also, like, I think that there's been times throughout the years, and I'm, you know, I was just talking with Steve about it, and we talked a little bit about it on the air last year. There was clearly tension between him and the front office. And so I think whenever those things started to heat up is when he started to get a little bit more tense at press conferences for the most part. And maybe that was a little bit going on last week. Maybe there were some more issues that were happening and there was something bubbling below the surface. I will say, you know, Gerard Gallant did come into the press room a couple days after that, which is something he never does, and was very relaxed and very conversational. And it was that was, to me, more of like the – well, this is kind of weird. This is not really his thing. Mm-hmm. So, you know, maybe he did know something. And, by the way, I do agree with you. I think he's going to have two places that are calling him, probably have already called him today, Detroit and Seattle.
Wow.
And so
– ooh!
So
wow, well, that's a storyline, huh? Imagine
yeah.
Seattle.
Yeah.
Holy cow, that would be really interesting.
So, I mean, it's not like he's going to be unemployed. He's going to be unemployed for as long as he wants to be unemployed. I'm
you know,
sure
by
he's
the way,
fine.
By the way, Jim Neal in Dallas, who's got an interim coach, Rick Bonus, gave these flowing reviews of Gallant today too. Yeah, no, his phone's gonna ring. He's gonna be fine. There's no doubt about that. But and you're right about. I've always wondered, and we'll never know. But what was that McPhee Gallant relationship, and how far back does this stuff go? I mean, you could go all the way back to McPhee gives a first, second, third up for Tatar, and Gallant just doesn't use him. They get Gusev over here, rush him in. Then don't use him in the playoffs, and then in the off season they don't sign him, and they send him out the door saying he's slow, and now he's figured his way and he's lighting it up in New Jersey. And then there was the one. Remember the one when Pacioretty, on a morning skate on the road, he said Pacioretty's not playing tonight, like he was going to be a healthy scratch because Pacioretty wasn't playing great last year. And then they sent a press release out saying, oh, it's an injury on Pacioretty, and Gallant came back and he looked at the PR staff and said, you guys created this. I think there's been tension there, you know, behind closed doors for a while.
Well, let's talk about Gallant and his relationship with the owner. I asked Adam earlier in the show, you know, who was Gallant's guy? Was Foley Gallant's guy? I mean, you're as close as anyone on radio to the owner, Bill Foley. Was Foley in his corner the whole time?
You know, Steve, we could come up with about 17 different scenarios why this could or couldn't have happened. But at the end of the day, I think you've got to go to the top of the list. And I think Foley's an Army guy. I think there's a disciplinary hierarchy. Gallant's a player's coach. I wonder if, you know, he thought Gallant was, like, you know, just a guy that maybe the players were just getting a little too cozy in their own shoes. And I can't believe that this was McPhee, McCrimmon generated. And I do think Foley wanted to win yesterday. And the clock's ticking. And, you know, with each passing day, he knows more and more about hockey. And he saw St. Louis make a change last year and win the Stanley Cup. And, oh, by the way, it happens in hockey more than any sport. Sullivan did it with Pittsburgh. Bylsma did it with Pittsburgh. Coaching changes do, for whatever reason, you know, reap rewards down the road. Whether DeBoer's the guy remains to be seen, but I don't know how you go anywhere beyond that Bill Foley was very much involved in this.
Which have been, what, two of the last 4 years in the NHL, teams have fired their coach and won the Stanley Cup that year.
Huh.
So it was.
I don't know why that is, but it does. It seems to happen.
So I guess the question is, and Kelly McCrimmon kind of evaded a little bit today, but I think the obvious question that needs to be answered: if DeBoer wasn't available, would this still have happened? In your mind, what would they have done if DeBoer's not there?
Well, there's a couple things, and you guys alluded to it. You know, with the cryptic nature and the Kremlin-esque attitude that they've got, do you think there's any surprise that this happened when they're not going to be back here until February 8th? Like that's like the least shocking thing if this was ever going to happen. The timing of it is odd in that the front office can do something about it in the next 5 weeks with the trade deadline coming up. So, you know, that's a little bit on the intriguing side, the timing of it. But DeBoer certainly, if you figure they've been talking to him at least to gauge a level of interest, maybe he got an offer or somebody else was expressing interest and they were fearful they maybe would lose him. That's certainly a possibility. You know, the problem is, I mean, you look at the team, and it comes back to the front office guys. The first year was Halley's Comet, the Disney movie, whatever you want to call it, and they were a fast team, and they tilted the ice on teams, and it was amazing. Now you've got Mark Stone and Pat Chiaretti. This is a hybrid. It's a mix of size and speed, and it's disjointed. And for whatever reason, Gallant, if you want to say it's Gallant and the coaching staff, they're just not getting it to mesh. And you watch them play against fast teams, and guys are skating around them like they're standing still. I mean, fast teams are a really bad matchup for this team. And I think they, at some point, got down to X's and O's to a degree.
My point that I was just talking about, and I'll get your read on this, a name to certainly watch around the trade deadline is Jonathan Marchessault. From what we understand, Gallant has blocked the move of Marchessault several times since he's been here. And it would make sense with a guy that's that tied with the head coach to maybe move on from him. And I know they've gotten calls about him. Do you think there's a chance he's gone before the trade deadline?
It could be anybody, Adam. I mean, you know, if you want to say other than Stone and Fleury, the rest of these guys better be walking around on eggshells. I mean, the one thing that was always a joke to me, it's such coach or GM speak to say we have 23 captains is the biggest load of hooey. It's not in every guy's DNA to be a captain. And I wonder if this would have come to this if this team had a captain and they have a players-only meeting and somebody gets their act together in the room. And listen, for whatever reason, if there's this inconsistent malaise above these guys, nobody wanted to talk about it in year one. 14 of those guys were mercenaries. They were UFAs or RFAs playing for contracts. They all got paid. And this ain't the first team in the hockey world that's gotten money and guys just kind of go into a mini shell and then they go bananas in their contract year. And you've got an older core of guys that all got paid at the same time.
Brian Blessing's with us. Let me get your reaction to some fan reaction. One, Mrs. Ladybug. I like that. Unprofessional move on their part. What do you think?
I get fans being torqued about this, and you know, if they had gone to the Stanley Cup, Steve, if they'd have been 20 games below 500 in the first year, they were always going to be the first. They were going to be the lovable lot, and there'd be a 20-year reunion for these guys. So all these guys are beloved and favorite sons. But I will tell you, the fans now are getting a dose of reality. This is a hockey team. You know, the first year was this thing. Now it's a hockey team with ups and downs and highs and lows. And all this, and listen, you had the fans on social media that, when they get down 4-0 to the Kings and they got booed off the ice, you can't boo our boys. The hell you can't. You're down 4-0 after 20 minutes to one of the worst teams in the league, and you're going to sit there and throw a parade for them? If you do that, then that's going to be accepted behavior and it'll become the norm. You know, you're paying a lot of money. If you go down there and boo, if they play like garbage and you boo them, God bless you. That's the beauty of hockey, bud. There's passion involved here and a dose of reality. And if you don't bring your lunch pail, any team in this league can kick your butt.
Do you like Pete DeBoer as the choice?
I'm not doing a cartwheel about that one, but I'll let time play out and see if these guys got it right. He is respected around the league. You know, everybody's got to hate him because of the San Jose tentacles. But clearly, he had Erik Karlsson and Brent Burns. yeah, Pavel, you tell me Pavelski. Pavelski's not Wayne Gretzky. I mean, they still had the meat and potatoes for a team, and that team drove off a cliff like Thelma and Louise this year. So he wasn't the answer in San Jose this year. I mean, you know, we'll see a fresh start. The one thing he does with his track record is when he takes over teams, there's a very quick reaction and improvement. So time will be the judge. The one thing I think is the big maybe loss of this whole thing, I would have envisioned at some point that even if Gallant was going to be a guy that was ultimately going to go to Detroit, that at some point Rocky Thompson would have been hired as an associate head coach and would have been the heir apparent. And Rocky Thompson's name was thrown out as a potential head coach around the league last year. I think Rocky Thompson's going to get a job probably at the end of this year doing a really good job in Chicago. And as a result of this, he's toast. He's gone. He's going elsewhere.
I got a question on text. I answered it, but I'll ask you. How does the crowd react to Peter DeBoer February 8th when the Golden Knights finally come home?
Ooh. I don't know. Do you want to get Golden Knights logoed clown suits for 18,000 people?
That'd be good.
He's our guy now. You got to embrace him. He's our guy.
I think it depends.
By the way, I always go back to that. Had that stupid penalty not happened, that was one of the greatest moves ever by a coach, and it was out of character for Gallant. But when he called DeBoer a clown the morning of Game 7, he took the heat off his players, and they responded, and they were kicking San Jose all over the ice that night. Yeah. That would have gone down as one of a brilliant move, you know, had the gong show penalty not happened.
Yeah, I was in the room at that time. I just remember looking around like, did he just say that? That's amazing. And it could have changed the course of both franchises. If San Jose loses that game, maybe they fire DeBoer after the game.
I think you're right.
And then he probably already has a job, and Gallant goes on, and they might win the Western Conference last year. And then all of a sudden, he has a lot more equity built up. It could have changed the course of both franchises.
Hey, Adam, if you got nothing going on in a couple of weeks, you want to go coach the Pacific Division at the All-Star game?
I still think Gallant should do it.
I think he should, too.
That'd be great.
Hey, Brian, what happens with that?
Probably Rick Tocchet or Travis Green will likely go. I'm telling you, between now and then, I will be stupefied if Gallant does not end up with the Red Wings. I mean, Tootsweet. I just think, and by the way, it would be a great move for Yzerman to do it now and use the last 30 games to get on the same page, figure out who do you want to keep, who you moving forward with, are you moving Anthony Seau and Mantha and Abdelkader, whatever. I think the sooner the better, and Yzerman was just choking on Blashill. Those guys are historically bad. Detroit's not going to get 50 points this year.
Brian, you're the man. We appreciate it. Let's hook up soon, okay?
All right, fellas. Have a good day.
There you go. Brian Blessing with us here, reacting to the firing, shocking firing of Gerard Gallant, but some reality thrown back at the fans who were unhappy. I understand it. There's no doubt it's shocking. We got a big event coming up here in town at 5 o'clock over at the Palms as primetime press conference is rolling out for Conor McGregor. Adam Hill is going to be covering that, so we'll get into that just a little bit. And then we've got our legal insider, Justin Watkins, on the way after 4.
Join the conversation on Twitter at Cofield & Co. It's time for the First Take Vegas Take, brought to you by the Golden Nugget Las Vegas.
Conor McGregor is in town. We got a big fight. UFC. McGregor back fighting MMA. That's cool. Press conference goes down this evening at 5 o'clock local time. So every day we check in with First Take, give our reaction, the Vegas take, to what is said on First Take. Well, Stephen A. and Max, well, they're in the fighting. You know, they like combat sports, and they both have more of a boxing background. But we already had that boxing crossover with Conor and Floyd, so that's where they went. They weren't going to break down the Conor McGregor-Donald Cerrone fight that's at UFC 246. Here's Stephen A. starting to talk about a possible rematch with Conor and Floyd.
I'm not saying that it wouldn't be watched and it wouldn't make money, but it's a waste of time. Here is why. You know Conor McGregor can't beat Floyd in a boxing match. You know Floyd can't beat Conor McGregor in the octagon. Conor McGregor's mouth and his ability to market himself. Brilliant, yeah. Okay? But what have I said? When's the last time we saw him win?
Been a long time.
Right.
I think November 2016.
And that was actually your worry. We talked about this about 3 months ago when the fight was booked, 2 months ago when the fight was booked. Like, how much interest is there going to be in Conor McGregor since he's been gone and he hasn't won an MMA fight? I think the fight is blowing up. I think. How are ticket sales going?
Very well, and I actually just saw over at the Palms, it is already rowdy. Yeah. It's crazy. So
it's listen, it's such a big deal. The great equalizer now for the UFC is ESPN.
Yeah.
Because they're all over this thing. I mean, there's been everything I watch on ESPN. I think I was watching one. What was it? Was it the San Diego State game last night? Was on ESPN2. And like most of the time, in the corner on the bottom line,
yeah,
there's a, you know, buy the pay per view. So people see that. They're going to promote the crap out of this, and they're going to make up for the time lost in his MMA career by Conor McGregor.
Yeah, there's been promos on like every event. We've seen, you know, I can't remember which game it was. I think it was I can't remember. Either way, I was watching a college basketball game yesterday, and the announcers were discussing the fight because they were doing a promo, and of course they were like, Conor McGregor's last fight was against, I don't know how to say this, I'm just not going to even try it. And I'm like, okay, it's one of the most prominent fighters there is, Khabib Nurmagomedov. You can say that. But like, they obviously don't know anything about it, but they're just being fed promos over and over and over again. They're promoting this fight so much, and ESPN is thrilled that they now own the pay-per-views. They're going to get Conor McGregor on their airwaves. He's all over the place on ESPN, and they're basically promoting it as Conor McGregor fight. Like, it doesn't even matter who he's fighting.
Right.
He's just back. And, you know, ESPN, he's all over the place. And anytime they put their might behind something promotionally, it blows up. And so I expect it to be pretty big.
This was really interesting. So while Stephen A. is like, what's the point? Why have another boxing match? Max came over the top and was like, the first one was a good fight.
The first fight was good and competitive.
Well, why was it? Because Floyd didn't train.
Because
you know
Floyd
that.
Wasn't in shape and Conor was amazingly effective for a guy who'd never been in a professional boxing ring. He looked like a world-class prize fighter in his pro debut. That is really hard to do.
I wouldn't go that far.
Well, that's his discipline in MMA. That's what he's focused on.
He's a talented fighter.
He's very talented.
So let me get into what he said here. When you say
what?
I don't know.
No, I just meant at the end. It's like
talking over each other.
Okay, I agree with Max that Conor's performance, at least, you know, for 5 or 6 rounds, was shocking.
He stunk.
Was shocking. Now, you say the whole time, you said it since the fight, that Floyd just carried him.
He didn't throw
him
a punch for 3 rounds.
But you do understand what Max is saying in terms of interest in the fight. They can get enough people to believe that Conor was really good in the fight. Now, here's the amazing part. You can counter with, hey, Floyd didn't train. Do you think Conor McGregor has worked on his boxing at all in anticipation and has been focused on improving his boxing since he lost that fight?
I don't know. He said yesterday he's going to win a world title in boxing.
I mean, I guess you could always find the you know, the fifth guy holding a world title and maybe pull an upset.
I didn't see much from him as a boxer. Like, yeah. If you said, hey, this is the guy's first ever boxing match, he's fighting the best fighter ever. Like, okay, you can judge it on that level. But I certainly didn't see enough to make me want to see it again. And I think Floyd, whenever he wanted to win, was going to win. And he's like, all right, now I'm going to go do it. And so, yeah, was Conor impressive? He's been a fighter, and he's been a stand-up fighter, so he knows how to throw strikes. He's not a boxer. That was an impressive boxing performance to me. It was, hey, a professional fighter who's amazing defensively is going to let you just throw strikes for 3 rounds and see what you can do. And that's what happened. But it was nothing I'd ever want to see again.
All right, play the end of that. Let's see if we can decipher it.
Let me get into what you said here. Let me get
I have global odds on what's going to happen at the press conference tonight. Ready?
Okay.
Over under, how late will Conor McGregor be to the press conference? Over under 6.5 minutes.
Whew.
That's got to be a big over. Come on.
I'm going to say under.
Really?
Yeah. They did it at 5 o'clock for him.
Okay. You said why? Because he likes to take naps?
Nap and a snack.
He has to have a nap and a snack, and that has generally gotten in the way of him being on time for afternoon press conferences.
Yes.
A nap and a snack.
Yeah, it's right in the middle of napping and snack time.
Total F-bombs by Conor McGregor at the press conference. Over, under 6.5?
Over. That's easy.
Wow, that was quick.
Way over.
Will Conor McGregor call Donald Cerrone slow or stiff? Yes, plus 150. No, minus 200.
Oh, man. Can I bet this?
Globally. That's
it's or? Slow or stiff?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my God. Max bet the yes.
Will Conor McGregor hold a bottle of his whiskey? Yes, minus 300. No, plus 200.
Hold is key. It will make an appearance. I don't know if he'll be holding it.
Mm.
It will be on stage somewhere.
Will he say the name? Yes is minus 1,000.
Yeah, of course.
Will I say the name? Yes is not even bookable.
Will you say it?
Yeah.
No. You're not going to say.
No.
You're not going to say proper 12.
No, I'm a greedy pig if they called up right now and they're like, hey, here's a fee. Then I'm in.
Yeah, okay.
Will Conor McGregor wear sunglasses? Yes, minus 400.
Yeah, he'll take them off, but he'll wear them.
Will Donald Cerrone call Conor McGregor McNugget? Yes, minus 200.
No.
Will Donald Cerrone hold a thinking Budweiser can or bottle? Yes, minus 200.
Yeah.
Hold again, though, the key, but he will have it there because he has a commemorative Bud can, right?
Yeah, for sure.
Okay.
It'll be there. I think I'll pick it up at some point.
I mean, they can't even book this, can they? Will Donald Cerrone wear a cowboy hat? Ooh, this one brings up bad memories. Remember how scared you were when a water bottle was whipped at your face at the MGM? Will either McGregor or Cerrone throw an object? Yes, 5-1.
Ooh, would you get the yes if they, like, throw shirts to somebody?
Yeah.
Object?
This is the problem with the global odds.
Exactly.
You can kind of tear them apart. Last one. Will McGregor or Cerrone come in physical contact? Yes, minus 150.
Yeah, because they're going to do a square off, and they'll do some little
bump.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, Adam. Good job. I know you have an incredibly busy day. Six more podcasts to record.
It's an easy day, Steve.
You're going to, if you can, later on, if anything really bad happens, like you're in a hospital or something from some explosive press conference, call us after 6.
Sure, record something. It'll work.
You're not going to record something. We're on until 7:30.
Oh, that's a good point.
We got plenty of time.
That's a good point.
And we're going long and strong until the game comes on. All right. Ari, take us to the 4 o'clock hour. I don't know why I'm specifically asking you, as if someone else is running the board. Justin Watkins, our legal insider, coming up on, there's a bunch of topics. How about the OJ lawsuit?
Make sure to tune in each day at 10 a.m. to ESPN News or the ESPN Radio app for First Take, Your Take with Jason Fitz.